Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, since it's Valentine's Day, I want to wish everyone a happy Valentine's Day, and maybe we'll revisit what the history of Valentine's Day is. Valentine's Day started in the time of the Roman Empire. In ancient Rome, February 14th was a holiday to honor Juno. Juno was the queen of the Roman gods and goddesses. The Romans also knew her as the goddess of women and marriage. The lives of young boys and girls were strictly separate. However, one of the customs of the young people was name drawing. On the eve of the festival of Lupercalia, the names of Roman girls were written on slips of paper and placed into each jar. Each young man would draw a girl's name from the jar and would then be partners for the duration of the festival with the girl whom he chose. Sometimes the pairing of the children lasted an entire year, and often they would fall in love and would later marry. Under the rule of Emperor Claudius II of Rome was involved in many bloody and unpopular campaigns. Claudius the Cruel was having a difficult time getting soldiers to join his military leagues. He believed that the reason was that Roman men did not want to leave their loves or families. As a result, Claudius canceled all marriages and engagements in Rome. The good Saint Valentine was a priest at Rome in the days of Claudius. He aided the Christian martyrs and secretly married couples, and for this kind deed, Saint Valentine was apprehended and dragged before the prefect of Rome, who condemned him to be beaten to death with clubs and to have his head cut off. He suffered martyrdom on the 14th day of February, 269 AD, the same day that had been devoted to love lotteries. Legend also says that St. Valentine left a farewell note for the jailer's daughter, who had become his friend, and signed it, "From your Valentine." Gradually, February 14th became the date for exchanging love messages, and St. Valentine became the patron saint of lovers. The date was marked by sending poems and simple gifts such as flowers. There was often a social gathering or a ball. Americans began to exchange handmade valentines in the early 1700s. The first mass-produced valentines in the United States were made around 1835 by a Mount Holyoke College student named Esther Howland. Her father, who owned a stationery store, imported valentines from England, but she wanted something more personal. She imported fancy paper and lace and employed assistants to help her in her enterprise. We currently celebrate Valentine's Day by honoring those we love with gifts, sentimental verses, and Valentine greeting cards. So that's the story about St. Valentine, who kind of had a hard time with it. But nonetheless, happy Valentine's Day to everyone. And let's play a little Valentine's music from the Summer of 42, Henry Mancini's The Summer Knows. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. The summer of 42. Henry Mancini, The Summer Knows. We're back on The Kevin Moore Show. Tickets for Chicago Theater Week, an annual celebration of the rich tradition of theater going in Chicago, are currently on sale. Chicago Theater Week will take place February 9th through the 19th, spanning a week and two full weekends. Heading into its fifth year, Chicago Theater Week is a program of the League of Chicago Theaters in partnership with Choose Chicago. Over 120 theater productions are expected to participate in the neighborhoods throughout the city and suburbs. A list of participating organizations is online at chicagotheaterweek.com. In February 2016, 124 productions offered value-priced tickets for performances during Chicago Theater Week. Almost 11,000 Chicago residents and visitors spanning 40 states attended a show during Chicago Theater Week. This coming February, visitors and residents will again have the opportunity to sample the extraordinary range of theatrical offerings throughout Chicagoland. This year marks the fifth year of Chicago Theater Week, and each year the program proves more successful than ever. Theater Week invites Chicago audiences and visitors to experience the wide range of offerings, comments Deb Clapp, Executive Director of the League of Chicago Theaters. We are so thrilled to be able to share the amazing work, and we equally love hearing from participants that they visited a favorite theater or discovered a great new one. This is a week that reminds us all that Chicago is known locally, nationally, and internationally for its theater scene, and especially this season for generating new work, showcasing fresh talent, and spotlighting its rich Chicago tradition. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning professional in the area of theatrical management, having successfully worked with the Hartford Stage Company and the nationally recognized Long Wharf Theater Company in New Haven, Connecticut, former director of management for the Goodman Theater. Deb has also been an inspirational force and has provided guidance to many of Chicago's smaller theater companies, such as Teatro Vista, About Face, and Chicago Children's Theater. One of the brightest stars in the world of Chicago theater and the executive director of the League of Chicago Theaters, now here to tell us about Chicago Theater Week 2017, Ms. Deb Clapp. Deb, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thanks, Kevin. Thank you for that beautiful introduction.
Well, very well deserved, and it's your busy week, kiddo.
Oh, it surely is.
Not that every week isn't busy. It starts, and it's terrific because things are really happening in Chicago. It's amazing, you know, to see all the theaters. You know, we're used to the big theaters. You know, we know the Goodman, the Steppenwolf, and Victory Gardens, and the Broadway in Chicago, and so forth. But there are so many smaller theaters that are doing such great work, Deb. It's amazing, and you're able to get that word out about them.
There are, yes, and very proud to be able to get the word out about them. You know, we have 247 member theaters of the league. And so, you know, you just named five really amazing theaters. It's just, you know, the amount of talent in this town, the amount of wonderful theater that's going on every single night, it is truly mind-boggling. And, you know, Theater Week gives us a chance to really celebrate that and explore it. And I think every year, this year we have 128 productions participating in Theater Week. And every year it gets more and more. So, you know, I hope one year we will have every single theater in Chicago producing a show, you know, during 2 weeks in February, right?
That's the time, right? You know, I'm reminded, I heard this quote the other day. The word theater comes from the Greeks. It means the seeing place. It's the place people come to see the truth about life and the social situation. Mm. And it's true because, you know, we're inundated every day, as you know, all of us, Deb, we're inundated about what's going on with politics and the world and so forth. And sometimes it's great just to get away and get refreshed by being in a different place in a different time, taking a step away from what we're used to doing every day and enjoying somebody experiencing and showcasing their talents for us.
Absolutely. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it's great to just get away and get your mind off things and see, you know, a fantastic musical production, something that, you know, really is uplifting and just, you know, really makes you forget your cares. Other times you go to the theater and you want to, you know, you really want to, You want to think. You want to be exposed to new ideas. Or you want to, you know, for me, a lot of times when I see a play, it helps me make sense of things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? It helps me figure out the world.
And isn't that the mission of any theater company, to stimulate and engage someone's imagination, or stimulate and engage their creativity, or stimulate and engage their intellect? So it's not necessarily always just about entertainment, and as much as about changing you as a person, that when you come out of the theater, you're different than when you went in.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
There's 250 theaters and counting, I guess, in Chicago. You don't get to all of them?
Well, I don't get to all of them every year. But I do, you know, I do make an effort to see a lot of theater. And I will admit there are a couple I have never been to.
Mm-hmm.
But I make an effort to try to get out to all of them, because I really, you know, you don't form a theater company unless you have something to say. And so I really feel like it's important for me, especially as the, you know, as the executive director of the League of Chicago Theaters, it's important to really see and understand what people, you know, why people form this theater company, why they're different, why they have to say what they have to say. So for me, getting out and seeing a new theater company, it's really a great experience. And, you know, some of the ones that I didn't know anything about before, I go out and see them, and they're my favorites now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and asking the question, how difficult is it to form a theater company?
Well,
I know how difficult it is to generate an audience. But how difficult
well,
is it to...
I'm going to tell you an old joke about Chicago theater. It's what do you call two actors sitting at a table?
Potential theater.
A theater company. Okay. So it's not hard to form a theater company. It's hard to put on a show. It is, you know, theater takes an incredible amount of manpower. It is very, very labor intensive. So it does take more than two actors. It takes a lot of people to, you know, build the set, and do the lights and do the costumes and, you know, market the show and raise the money.
Sure.
So it takes a lot of people, and it is hard. I would say, you know, it's probably, you know, it's the most collaborative. We always say that it's the most collaborative art form, and that is because so many people are required to make it work, and they all need to, you know, they all need to share in a vision. Even the person who's, you know, working on your telemarketing team, right, making outgoing calls to try, whether it's to try and sell tickets or to try to raise money, that person has to be invested in the mission of the company.
Sure.
So it's very important that everyone be really be attuned to the vision of the company. And that's really, you know, that's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's easy, but it's also hard. It's easy in that who doesn't want to put on a show,
sure,
you know? But it's hard bringing it all together. And audiences in Chicago are phenomenal. That's one of the reasons why we have so many theater companies, I think, is because audiences are really curious and eager to see new and different work. So that makes it a little bit easier in Chicago because we do have an audience here.
You know, undoubtedly, we always compare, of course, to New York, and we've given the moniker the second city, which I don't believe myself, because I think we have as much good theater in Chicago as we have anywhere. Do you see, though, that now in Chicago, we are developing such a national reputation over the last few years that what becomes a national recognized performance or play now spans the entire United States, whereas it used to start in New York and then kind of travel across the country.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think for us, for Chicago, I think we have, you know, we're so fortunate to have both, right? So one of the things that happened this year that really, that sort of made us, you know, it feels like we are sort of solidifying our reputation as the theater town, was that Hamilton chose to come here first mm-hmm. after New York.
Yeah.
And so that really, that says something about, you know, it says something about the infrastructure here. In other words, there is the talent and the workforce to support a show like that for however long it runs. And also, again, the audience. You know, they knew that they would find an audience for Hamilton here. And I think that, yes, you're right, more and more shows are starting here and traveling, either touring around the country or going into New York. So Chicago audiences really get an opportunity to see a lot of Broadway shows first here. And so I think that our, you know, who we are as a theater capital is becoming, we're getting a bigger and bigger reputation. And I think we're different from New York in that, you know, Broadway is a thing unto itself, mm-hmm. right? And becoming more and more so. But I think that, you know, also in New York, there's a lot, so a lot of the smaller companies are really focused on, also on touring, right? On creating productions in New York, but on touring. But in Chicago, we also have a lot of companies that are, they're making theater for Chicago audiences, right? Mm-hmm. It's not, the ambition is maybe not to tour.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really special about us. And, you know, we do more world premieres in Chicago than anywhere else in the world.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I know it's a matter of economics, and I guess the complaint, I don't know if that's too strong a word, in as much as an observation. I always thought that some of the plays that we have here, like they do in New York, should stay here longer. You know, you go to New York and Phantom's still playing, and Les Mis is, I think, still yeah. playing, and Wicked is still playing, and My Fair Lady, I don't know, might be still playing. But in Chicago, you know, we get them, and I can't believe that they can't wait. Wicked. We lost Wicked. And I thought, geez, that'd still be playing, be successful. And we got to say goodbye to it. And that's what I think that some of these I like to – I say this to Jim Cordy, my good friend Jim Cordy
at
Paramount. I said, Jim, let them stay there a little longer because you got great product here. But, of course, it's a matter of economics and just scheduling. Of course, you can't. But and there's a lot of instances in Chicago where that could be the case.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you, and I do wish we could figure that out. And you're right, it is economics. It's really, you know, in the case of Paramount, which they do such wonderful musicals, and a lot of shows that are big hits, whether it's in smaller theaters or even in bigger theaters like The Goodman or Steppenwolf, the model that we build theater on frequently is a subscription model.
Right.
And so you have to close a show in order to make room for the next show coming in. And a lot of times, you know, what some theaters have been doing lately, which I think is a wonderful thing, is they've been remounting successful mm-hmm. Shows, which gives us another opportunity to see them and gives more audiences chances to see a really popular show. So that sometimes is taking care of it. But also it can be about, you know, a lot of theaters rent their spaces. So, and somebody else is renting them,
right.
So they have to get out.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a lot of – I really wish we could figure that out. You know, when I first started at the league, I thought, isn't there some theater that we could somehow, you know, keep empty and then move a hit show mm-hmm. in there? But the economics of that didn't work out either.
Well, you're talking to a person who would like to see the Christmas Carol all year round, too, isn't it? Yeah. I had the opportunity for many years to serve on the College of the Performing Arts over at Roosevelt University. And got involved with the young people who were going to the theater school there. And, you know, we have so many opportunities for these young people, whether it's at DePaul or Northwestern or Columbia or Roosevelt. And for them to have the opportunity after studying in the university to come and, you know, take that theoretical experience and make a practical experience in the theaters. And that's with all these theaters we have, that's a great opportunity for them.
It is, yeah. So important. So important. And, you know, that's – Roosevelt is one of the, you know, the great schools. And Columbia, Northwestern, DePaul, all, you know, they have really great performing arts programs. And that's why – is because there are so many options for people to, even as students, for them to get professional experience.
How many years have you been with the League of the Chicago Theaters?
I've been with the League for 8 years.
8 years. Now, here, 8 years later, would you have envisioned then that we would have so many theaters that we see now? And what do we expect, or what can we expect to see, or what's your anticipation on things, how they will change in the next 8 to 10 years?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. We have seen, in the past 8 years, we have seen the rise of a number of theaters. Certainly more. I think when we, you know, when I started, I think the League had 150 or 170 members, and now we have 250. And so, I think, and the majority of them are small theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think in the next 8 to 10 years, what we're going to see, I hope what we're going to see is the, you know, one of the things that hasn't happened in the past 8 years is we haven't seen a lot of theaters grow from, you know, we have some really, really fantastic mid-sized theaters, and they haven't really grown into a place where you would call them, you know, institutional theaters without the, you know, without the bad connotation that the word institution puts on a theater. But, you know, I would say, you know, call it, you know, firmly established with a long future.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to see more of that. I think we're going to see a lot of changes in the ways in which theaters make work. So there's a lot of different models. So we're going to see a lot more devised work, that is work that's coming directly from ensembles, and they're writing it and performing it and putting it out into the world. And I think we're going to see more, you know, what you're talking about, more open-ended runs of productions.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, we're going to see fewer theaters being holding on to this kind of subscription model, and some theaters are already starting to move away from that so that they can be a little bit more flexible in the length of their runs, but also in the length of time that it takes them to bring a work to the stage. So we're sort of, the model that we have is you rehearse a show for 3 to 4 weeks, and then you run it for 3 or 4 weeks, and then it's kind of done unless it has a further life. But I think more theaters are going to be moving to this model that really requires an ensemble, a group of people who are committed to working together for an extended period of time to create the work and bring the work onto the stage, and then you know, together either, you know, decide on what the current or future life of that piece is going to be. You know, we're seeing a lot more you know, you can call them, I guess, interactive pieces happening where audiences are actually asked to participate in the work. I think we're going to see a lot more of that.
But there is something to be said about the consistency, I think, of the subscription model, in that people, I think we're it's a generational thing,
yeah.
Deb, that you see, you know, it's our responsibility as parents and grandparents and teachers and mentors to introduce now a new generation to the classics of the American theater. The My Fair Ladies, the Rodgers and Hammerstein great, the Lerner and Lowe's great works and so forth, so that they can build a foundation, just like my mom and dad took me to the theater. Now I'm taking my grandchildren I'm taking to the theater. 3 years old, I take them to the theater because they have to have they can't, their attention span isn't for the whole play, but, you know, they'll be able to at least get that foundation from which they can make, because that's the future of audience for theater. So I think that there's a value to that subscription series. But as you say, the consistency of keeping a long period of time might change a little bit. And I think there's two other things that I would make observations on to your point. And that is, 8 years ago, we didn't see necessarily, although God bless his soul, Mr. DeSantis, who did such a great job at Drury Lane out in Evergreen Park in Beverly, where I grew up and so forth. You know, he had that there. But now Drury Lane in Oak Park's a whole different situation, putting Broadway theaters on. And what Timmy Rader and Jimmy Cordy are doing out at Paramount, way out in Aurora, they have an audience, a subscription audience there that's rivaling, you know, Marriott's almost.
Absolutely.
And that's terrific, because those people don't always want to come downtown, Deb. You know what I mean? They want to stay out there, but they're getting that same quality, as good a quality, as you would on a Broadway stage.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I didn't mean to say the subscription model is going away.
No, I understand. Yes.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, all of those theaters that you mentioned are doing just absolutely amazing work. And I do think that that it is important for there to be subscribers for that work to continue.
And I think the other point, too, I think we need, and Jackie Russell does, and you were involved in Chicago Children's Theater, done such a remarkable job now that she has her own theater, a footprint now you can rely upon, that we need theater for younger people. And I'm talking about ages 2.5 to 6, that they can come and be there for 30 minutes or 45 minutes, something that interests them, so that they know that going to the theater is a hell of a lot better than sitting in front of a TV watching some goofy show, you know? And they get that taste of that. So now the next one they see is going to be able to kind of move up to a little more sophisticated show, and then finally move up to normal, regular theater.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. No, I think you're right about that. Absolutely.
But with all the opportunities we have here, I think that we should be very fortunate to say that Chicago is one of a kind, and it's because of people like Deb Clapp and the group of Chicago theaters we have here, and the continued success as we move forward.
Well, thank you so much.
One last note, anything we can say about what to look forward to here in this Chicago Theater Week?
Chicago Theater Week is, it is amazing. ChicagoTheaterWeek.com is the website. There are 128 shows on there. I think some really extraordinary productions. I've been fortunate to see a lot of shows in the past couple of weeks, and I think that people should, you know, get out and try something new. Everything's $15 or $30, so that's the only risk you have, and you may discover something truly, truly special.
Chicago Theater is a leader in the United States, with more than 250 theaters throughout Chicagoland, comprising a rich and varied community ranging from storefront, non-union theaters to the most renowned resident theaters in the country, including 5 that have been honored with regional Tony Awards and the largest touring Broadway organization in the nation. Chicago theaters serve 5 million audience members annually and have a combined budget of more than $250 million. Chicago theater companies produce more than 100 world premiere productions and adaptations. Each year, Chicago theaters send new work to resident theaters across the country, to Broadway, and around the world. The League of Chicago Theaters is an alliance of theaters which leverages its collective strength to promote, support, and advocate for Chicago's theater industry locally, nationally, and internationally. The League of Chicago Theaters Foundation is dedicated to enhancing the art of theater in the Chicago area through audience development and support services for theaters and theater professionals. And on the line with us right now is the executive director of the League of Chicago Theaters, our good friend Deb Clapp. Deb, one more time for a website or phone number if people like to get some information.
Sure. ChicagoTheaterWeek.com is the website, and you can call us at 312-554-9800 if you have any questions.
February 9th through the 19th and beyond. Let's not stop there because there's always things going around. You know, remember one time, you know, theater used to kind of dwindle out in about May or June, but now it's year-round.
Year-round, absolutely.
And it's terrific. And we have outdoor theater in the summer and a lot of different offerings. Deb, always a pleasure to have you, kiddo. And anytime you need to get the word out, I'm sure Kathy Taylor will let you know and let us know, and we'll be happy to do that.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
Okay, Deb, take care.
Great talking to you.
Deb Clapp, the executive director of the League of Chicago Theaters. Again, for information, 312-554-9800. She does a terrific job, and there's so much to talk about, and there's so much great theater in Chicago. She said over 250 theater companies and counting, because you never know what's going to come around the corner. And all different types of theater, for kids and for young people, for adults and musicals and dramas and serious works. In fact, we're going to the Chicago Shakespeare Theater tonight to see The Book of Joseph, which we have the opportunity of talking with our good friend Marilyn Halpern here in a second. And but just great theater everywhere. So, again, if you have the opportunity, ChicagoTheaterWeek.com, or give Deb's staff a call at 312-554-9800. Well, continuing our theme of Valentine's Day, from Richard Roper in the Chicago Sun-Times, an article, Sexism, Injustice, Pain, it's all in the Valentine monologues. Who's responsible for Valentine's Day? Richard writes, becoming a major commercial and romantic event featuring cards and flowers and dinner reservations and the giving of the bling. Who's behind the dubious trend of some houses and businesses actually displaying the elaborate Valentine's Day decorations in their windows and on their doors for weeks before the big day? Who's the driving force behind Valentine's Day as a marketing phenomenon, a huge date night for restaurants and theaters, an advertising gimmick, a near official American holiday? Nope. We can't blame it on the greeting card companies or the chocolate manufacturers or the jewelers or even those mysterious people in Vermont who have devoted their lives to making cutesy-themed teddy bears. Sure. The romantic product industries have a vested interest in Valentine's Day, and they've aggressively contributed to its frightening growth. But it's not corporate America that should be held responsible for making Valentine's Day a holiday. It's women. Without women, Valentine's Day would die a quick death. Without the input of women, February 14th would be just another cold day. A generalization? You betcha. But it's an accurate one. I wish we could test it right now. I wish we could ask the men of this country just one question. Should Valentine's Day exist? What do you think the results would be? How many men would actually vote to keep Valentine's Day on the calendar? Zero. Not even that guy in Will and Grace. Valentine's Day exists because women want it to exist. We can talk all we want about men and women being equal and wanting the same things, but the truth is that most women are thrilled about the existence of Valentine's Day, and most, if not all, men would rather catch a head cold than observe the rituals of Valentine's Day. Of course, you could take a stand. You could tell your honey that you don't believe in Valentine's Day and you're not going to be co-opted by a commercialized holiday. If you want to demonstrate your love, you don't need Hallmark to do your talking for you. You're a rebel, an individualist, a man's man. You're not going to send flowers or take her out to dinner or buy her treats just because the advertising agencies and the fluffy articles in the newspapers say you should. One might think a woman would appreciate a man who thinks for himself like that. And one would be wrong. The man who tells a woman he doesn't celebrate or believe in Valentine's Day is not rewarded or applauded. He is branded as a terminal cheapskate and a thoughtless oaf. Even if a woman in his life smiles sweetly and says, "That's all right, honey, I don't care about Valentine's Day," inside she is thinking, "You stupid jerk. How am I supposed to go to work and act happy when all the women around me are getting flowers and sappy phone calls? You stupid jerk." The only way this Valentine's Day madness could be reined in would be if millions of women of all ages decided to put a stop to it. if women led the movement to simplify and scale back Valentine's Day to make it less of an event, well, they have that power. Men, imagine if the woman in your life came to you this morning and said, honey, please don't plan anything special for Valentine's Day this year. In fact, I insist that we don't do anything. If you want to take me to dinner or send me flowers or tell me how much you love me, do it when you sincerely want to do it, not when the calendar says you're supposed to do so. That's not love. That's cultural peer pressure. Until the woman lets the man off the hook for Valentine's Day, the man is on the hook for Valentine's Day. Remember, it's their holiday, and we're just slaves to it. Richard Roper, the injustice of the Valentine monologues. So some Valentine's thoughts. Well, let's play a little music in honor of Valentine's from our friend Herb Alpert to remind all our Valentines that this guy's in love with you. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
You see this guy. This guy's in love with you. Yes, I'm in love. Who looks at you the way I do? When you smile, I can tell we know. How can I show you I'm glad I got to know you, 'cause I've heard some talk. They say you think I'm fine. Yes, I'm in love. And what I'd do to make you mine, tell me now, is it so? Don't let me be the last to know. My hands are shaking.
For Valentine's, this guy's in love with you. He certainly is. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. William Shakespeare was the most remarkable storyteller that the world has ever known. Homer told of adventure and men at war. Sophocles and Tolstoy told of tragedies and of people in trouble. Terence and Mark Twain told comic stories. Dickens told melodramatic ones. Plutarch told histories, and Hans Christian Andersen told fairy tales. But Shakespeare told every kind of story: comedy, tragedy, history, melodrama, adventure, love stories, and fairy tales. And each of them so well that they have become immortal. In all the world of storytelling, his is the greatest name. Chicago Shakespeare Theater announces the cast and creative team for Short Shakespeare, Romeo and Juliet, a 75-minute abridgment of William Shakespeare's classic tale of true love found and tragically lost. Adapted and directed by Marty Lyons and featuring a dynamic ensemble cast, the production speaks to today's young people about their own lives. In addition to public performances on Saturdays, this production welcomes 1,000 students each day during its 5-week run in the Courtyard Theater, followed by an extensive tour to schools across the region through April 28th. Short Shakespeare, Romeo and Juliet, will be performed for the public Saturdays at 11, February 25th through March 25th. And after each performance, this is very special, the actors remain on stage for a question and answer session before joining the audience in the lobby for one-on-one conversations and photo opportunities. And on the line with us right now is the Director of Education and Communications for Chicago Shakespeare Theater, a nationally regarded leader in the field of arts education. Under her guidance, Marilyn Halpern, Chicago Shakespeare Theater's Youth Engagement Initiative have evolved into one of the most respected curriculum integrated arts and education programs in the country. In 2014, her 22-year tenure as the Chief Architect and Head Administrator of Chicago Shakespeare Theater's transformational programs was honored by the White House with the National Arts and Humanities Youth Program Award. Over the years, Marilyn has created a national model altering the way that Shakespeare is being taught in American classrooms. In 2011 and 2013, her work through the CPS Shakespeare Ensemble and Sheldon and Bobby Zabel Bard Corps Professional Development Program for Teachers was showcased at the National Conference for Teachers of English. Reaching across continents, Ms. Halpern serves as a partner in education to the University of Birmingham's Shakespeare Institute in the UK. Marilyn has also developed enrichment programs for Chicago Shakespeare Theater's adult audiences, including academic lectures, extensive supplementary materials, and dramaturgical essays and accessibility programs serving people with disabilities. Marilyn holds a master's degree in clinical social work from Smith College in Massachusetts. And now presenting Short Shakespeare, Romeo and Juliet, Saturday mornings at 11, February 25th through March 25th at Chicago Shakespeare Theater on Navy Pier, our good friend, Ms. Marilyn Halpern. Marilyn, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Good morning. How are you?
Always a pleasure.
Good morning.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure to have you.
It's good to hear your voice.
Well, as it is yours. And you, Short Shakespeare, Romeo and Juliet, the kids got to love this one.
They always do. Every 4 years, like clockwork, we bring it back because it is. If you're going to do one Shakespeare in the course of your high school career, it's going to be Romeo and Juliet that you are first introduced to.
And isn't it a great way to introduce young people to? You know, not too many years ago, there was this great movie, of course, Shakespeare in Love, which we all enjoyed seeing. And I think it regenerated the life of Shakespeare to a lot of young people. Now it's going to be on the stage at Chicago Shakespeare. And I remember seeing Zeffirelli's production in movies many years ago, which did the same thing.
Well, and we're so excited because Shakespeare in Love has so much of Romeo and Juliet
right.
in it. And actually, the person who is designing the fights for Shakespeare in Love is also designing the fights for our abridged Romeo and Juliet because
wow, cool.
those shows overlap so much. So
sure.
It's great to have them on stage very close to the same time here.
Your problem, Marilyn, is you're not busy enough. That's the thing.
Yeah, I know. It's a shame.
You need more to do.
We need a lot more to do here.
You know, things have gone so well with Charles Shakespeare and with the talks of expansion and so forth and the great – in fact, we're going to see – Kimberly and I are going to see Book of Joseph tonight. We're looking forward to that.
Oh, such an important new work. and so timely. So timely. You think it's about one thing that's, you know, decades ago, and suddenly it's about our lives now.
Yeah. And it speaks to Chicago Shakespeare with the great job that you and Barbara and Rick and Chris have done, and that's to take what was originally the idea of having Shakespeare presented, but kind of spanning, you know, literature in general. And we have so many different types of plays that are presented at Chicago Shakespeare that exposes us to a lot of different opportunities.
Absolutely. And it's been so fascinating this year because a couple of our plays already, you know, which were in the works years ago, you know, or at least, well, yeah, Book of Joseph was in the works years ago, and then King Charles III, which was on our stage this fall, was, you know, in our planning stages for a few years, and then suddenly all of these have such new relevance. And Romeo and Juliet will be the same, I think, with all of the talk and focus now on the violence and the divisive world that at least we're, you know, is one of the focuses now on on Chicago, whether we want it or not. That's the world of Romeo and Juliet as well.
You know, I know it's probably a cynical comment, and I'm sure people would laugh at it, but I contend, and I'm sure you do, that if we're able to bring let me think of a quote that I just read the other day from Stella Adler, the great acting teacher and actress. She said, "Life will beat you down and crush your soul, but art will remind you that you have one."
Oh, I love that.
Isn't it a beautiful quote? And if we can introduce these young people to the theater, if we can introduce them to what you're showing on the stage there when they're in grammar school and high school, maybe we wouldn't have all the damn problems we got that's going on in the city of Chicago right now.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that just is that beautiful quote of Adler says, but one of the things that art does as reading and literature do in hopefully too when the reader is engaged is create empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the most, and to understand one another and to understand ourselves. So there is, when these stories are put on stage within feet away from a young audience, so it's immersive here. It is one of the most powerful ways of creating empathy in young people that I know of.
How do you go about bringing this to the schools in that the kids come and they're able to perform? That's going to be a tough process sometimes.
And are you talking about when students are on our stage performing?
Yes.
Okay, so though they won't be performing in this Romeo and Juliet, we'll be performing to them. But mm-hmm. when we have students performing on our stage, as we did a couple of months ago in Battle of the Bard, which is a high school Shakespeare slam mm-hmm. That we do in collaboration with Chicago Youth Shakespeare, that is, we're reaching out to teachers first, and saying, is this something that you want to introduce your students to have a small group at school that rehearses at school, that comes and does workshops here and then meets other students from across the region. The community that forms from between these schools is electric and so powerful and meaningful. So their students are finding their voices and finding themselves through speaking Shakespeare in this region-wide, what we call a Shakespeare slam. But this now, in a few weeks, they'll be coming and seeing professional actors on our stage doing this as well.
You know, you're giving me goosebumps here because I'm thinking about this. Here's kids that go to school in the inner city. Then there's kids that go to school out in Barrington. There's kids that go to school on the North Shore. Yeah. And they're able to mingle and come together because they're unified by a common denominator. That's their love for Shakespeare. That's absolutely wonderful.
Who'd have thunk?
Really?
Right?
That's absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, and I think I think part of that is that they're surprising themselves when they find that they get Shakespeare and that it's fun and that it opens something up in them. And I think that when people are surprised and when they're feeling open, they're not only learning but they're open to other people in a way that transcends our usual day-to-day.
And the key to a vital life is possessing an eagerness to learn and a willingness to change. That's exactly what these kids are doing. And now you're a victim of your own success because now they're going to come and see Romeo and Juliet on stage, and they're going to go, hold the phone here. I want to be participatory in my Shakespeare in my school. Now you got some of them, you can't accommodate all of them. That's the
Well, that's why we're building a larger
theater. That's right. Good problem to have. Good problem to have. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah. We'll have three theaters soon to fill everyone who wants to come and see Shakespeare. Yeah.
I would imagine there'd be a great regeneration when they come to see Romeo and Juliet. And especially, and you know, I love the talk back at the end of the play, where the audience is able to talk with some of the performers, and the performers are so very welcoming and solicitous in giving them information and sharing information how this all works and so forth, and yourself included, because I've seen you up there a couple of times, you know, answering some questions, and then all of a sudden they get this little seed that's starting to germinate, and they go, geez, this is kind of neat, and it just grows from there.
It's so interesting to me and so remarkable that the longer this program has gone on, you know, we're now we're in our 25th year of this education program. And we're old enough that people who sat in those discussions and listened to actors talk about why they chose acting and what their love of the profession is, then now they're actors on our stage, and they're remembering listening to actors talking with them. In fact, Marty Lyons, who is the director of this short Shakespeare, Romeo and Juliet, her first exposure to Shakespeare was when our abridgment of Romeo and Juliet toured to her high school, Libertyville High School, and that was the beginning of her passion for this play and for Shakespeare. And here she is now directing our production.
That is awesome.
Isn't that great?
That really is cool. That's very
so
cool.
So all of the ripple effects that we never, ever, ever will know. You know, we know a few of them, but I know that when that stone is thrown out there in the water, those ripples are going and going in so many ways that we will never know, and that's thrilling to me.
That's very cool. That's very cool. As we evolve from, as you said, this has been going on for 20 years, where do we go from here? Do we have more productions? You're going to go out to after this is over with, of course, you go out to the various schools and so forth and are able to share a production with the various schools, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in fact, when we had our teacher workshop this past weekend for Romeo and Juliet, the teacher from Libertyville High School, which we are going to be touring to this year, was there, and it was just this perfect circle. So, yeah, we'll go out for 5 weeks on the road and perform at 25 different schools during that time.
Wow.
And then this particular production will come to a close for a little bit.
You know, that's just so exciting, Marilyn. I can't, words can't describe it.
The 40,000 students will just under 40,000 students will see this production before the end of its run, which is amazing and so powerful. And some of those will, you know, about half of them will have seen it here, and about half of them will have seen it in high schools and junior highs across the region.
How do you go about choosing what particular production you're going to put on, what play you're going to put on?
So right now I'm going to be talking just about the school program because truly they don't allow me in the room when we're talking about our main stage work.
Okay.
So that's a whole other conversation that I can shed no light on whatsoever.
Well, I'm going to talk to Barbara in that because you should be in that room.
But in terms of the school productions, when we started 25 years ago, we gathered with a group of teachers. I remember this really clearly. Actually, at that point, I was still a volunteer. And Chris and I met with a group of teachers in a beautiful room at the Newberry Library and really just started talking about, well, what do you want? What do you need from us? And pretty much the consensus was, we need Romeo and Juliet every year. So that much, I think we just felt as a professional theater, we probably couldn't do, and I might have had to slit every wrist I had in order to do that. But what we did commit to is, all right, so that is the workhorse. That's the curriculum workhorse. We need to do it regularly. The other one is Macbeth, that if those are the two, if you're going to do one play, you do Romeo and Juliet. If you're going to do two plays in the course of your high school curriculum, then you're going to add Macbeth. If you add a third, it might be Hamlet. You know, so
sure. It
kind of goes down that way.
Yeah.
And we loop in Romeo and Juliet now every 4 years. We loop in Macbeth every 4 years. And then sort of our outliers are our comedies because, unfortunately, there is no real consensus in school curricula around doing a comedy, and if they do a comedy at all.
Yeah.
And if they do, it's kind of all over the place. But we realized early on that in order to serve the curriculum and in order to serve the needs of students and teachers, it may not just be giving them the play that they're studying, but we want to engage students, and that is probably more important than giving them the play that they're studying. And so that's when we started to introduce different comedies into the mix.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've done Midsummer Night's Dream. We've done...
Kids love that, though, don't they?
Sorry?
Kids love Midsummer Night's Dream.
They do.
Yeah.
They love comedy.
Yeah.
Because who doesn't love to laugh?
Yeah.
And so that's what I feel like. Even if they're not studying Comedy of Errors or Taming of the Shrew or Midsummer Night's Dream, their relationship to Shakespeare will be opened up and changed because they laughed and had a great time.
Sure, sure.
So we make the decision year by year of, is it going to be a comedy or is it going to be one of the workhorses?
You know, it's always fun. I have so much fun chatting with you. And, I know the kids right now, maybe some of them understand the opportunity they're afforded here by seeing Shakespeare and coming to the programs you present or even participating in them. They will years from now, if nothing else. It's like your kids, you know. They hate you when they're teenagers, but all of a sudden you become very smart when they're in their 20s, you know. And at least that's what I've experienced.
I hope they may be hating us when we bring them in the morning and greet them. And you can tell by students' body language because, you know, they're adolescents at that point,
sure,
right?
Sure,
and you
sure.
know, like, oh, you really don't want to be here, do you? And then by the time they leave the theater, their body language is so open
sure. And
so jazzed. And this happens day after day after day. And honestly, it's probably, in terms of my job, which has many best ofs, that's way at the top of the best of.
I'll bet is. I remember when I was young, I was kind of a hoodlum and an athlete and everything else, and my mother used to take me to the theater. kicking and screaming. And now when I have friends and contemporaries that say, ask that to find out that I'm hosting a radio show that deals with culture and the arts, they go, "This is the same Kevin Moore. I can't believe that's the same person." But I'm glad she took me, and I'm glad I enjoyed it, because now I had that foundation from which I could build upon. And we have to pass that on to the next generation, right?
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, that's part of what's so wonderful about our Shakespeare, our Chicago Shakespeare in the Parks program, is that families, like our Saturdays, but there are only five of those for Romeo and Juliet, but, you know, then we go out the entire city, across the whole city, into every neighborhood with an abridged production of Shakespeare, and families just come and picnic, and you know. So at one level, it's just a family outing in a park, and in another level, it is an engagement with Shakespeare, and very often the first engagement, and you know. Again, we're changing lives. So,
what an opportunity it is. Chicago Shakespeare's short Shakespeare series is emblematic of the theater's commitment to young audiences, which has resulted in 1 in 4 audience members being age 18 or under. Whether families attending a summer musical production at Navy Pier or the free Chicago Shakespeare in the Parks tour in neighborhoods across the city, as Marilyn just mentioned, or the 40,000 students and teachers each year who participate in celebrated Team Shakespeare education programs, Chicago Shakespeare Theater strives to bring a theater-going experience to the next generation. Chicago Shakespeare Theater is a leading international theater company and the recipient of the Regional Theater Tony Award. Under leadership of Artistic Director Barbara Gaines and Executive Director Chris Henderson, Chicago Shakespeare Theater is dedicated to creating extraordinary productions of classics, new works, and family programming, to unlocking Shakespeare's work for educators and students, and to serving as Chicago's cultural ambassador through its World Stage Series. Through a year-round season encompassing more than 650 performances, Chicago Shakespeare Theater attracts 225,000 audience members annually. 1 in 4 of its audience members is under 18 years old, and today its education programs have impacted the learning of over 1 million students. Chicago Shakespeare Theater is proud to take an active role in empowering the next generation of literate, engaged cultural champions and creative minds. During 2016, Chicago Shakespeare Theater spearheaded the Shakespeare 400 Chicago Festival, in addition to announcing the creation of an innovative performance venue, The Yard at Chicago Shakespeare. And on the line with us right now is the Director of Education and Communications for Chicago Shakespeare Theater, our very dear friend, Marilyn Halpern. Marilyn, maybe a phone number or website if people like to get some information?
I would love to. It's www.chicagoshakes, with ES at the end, of shakes.com. And then our box office number is 312-595-5600.
Always a pleasure. You're a very dear friend. I so much enjoy chatting with you about Shakespeare and Chicago Shakespeare Theater, and I could do it for hours, and that's why I always look forward to it.
Thank you. Me too. And thank you for reaching out, and thank you for your interest, and we look forward to having you back here very soon.
You're very welcome, my dear, and look forward to talking with you soon.
Take good care.
Thanks, Marilyn.
Okay.
Marilyn Halpern, a very special lady in Chicago theater and certainly Chicago Shakespeare Theater. The Director of Education and Communications for one of our jewels in Chicago, a jewel that is renowned and known worldwide. And again, for information, 312-595-5600. The short Shakespeare series Romeo and Juliet coming up Saturday mornings at 11, February 25th through March 25th. And before we talk with our next special guest and our good pal, can you sum up your romantic life in just 6 words? Well, here are some ideas. Where he is, I am home. Love, 8 pounds, 6 ounces. Endurance is an expression of love. Everyone's crazy except you and me. My heart is my strongest muscle. And I like this one. May I have the last dance? For years, fondue dining at Gaia's Cafe has been a favorite indulgence among Chicagoans as well as out-of-towners. For many, it is a way to celebrate a special event or occasion. For others, it is simply an unforgettable dining experience that's fun to share with friends. The nation's most romantic restaurant sets hearts on fire with holiday specials everyone will love. Voted the nation's most romantic restaurant by USA Today, legendary Chicago institution Gejas Cafe, 340 West Armitage, is planning the most romantic Valentine's Festival celebration in its 52-year history. For 11 days from Friday, February 10th through Monday, February 20th, the renowned Restaurant of Romance will be elegantly decorated and feature sparkling champagne, celebration of marriage night, live flamenco and classical guitarists, photo keepsakes, and delicious sizzling hot fondue cuisine. Our goal at Gejas is to create the perfect Valentine's Day experience for our guests, says Jeff Lawler, Gejas proprietor. We will combine all the signature Gejas ingredients, romantic atmosphere, fine champagne, delicious fondues, lavish decorations, and live music with special flower arrangements, couples massages at Lincoln Park Massage, making it the perfect recipe for romance. The 11-day Valentine's Festival celebration includes, well, I'll let our very special guest tell us about these. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning leader in the hospitality industry, one of Chicago's great restaurateurs, the proprietor of Chicago's most romantic dining destination, now presenting in his Restaurant of Romance Valentine's Day at Gejas Cafe, 340 West Armitage, for 11 days, beginning Friday, February 10th, and continuing through Monday, February 20th. The second most romantic man in Chicago, my good pal, Mr. Jeff Lawler. Jeff, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
How are you, Kevin?
Always okay. A pleasure, my pal. I look forward to February every year.
Every year. I wish I knew how many. I think it's been like in the area of 15 years, hasn't it?
I was still in grammar school. Yes, you're right.
Well, you were romantic. I was romantic.
Yes, we started early. We started very early. And the nuns used to beat the crap out of me because of that. Well, we got a great year coming up, and usually you don't. It's not one day here. Jeff Lawler celebrates for 10 days, for 2 weeks he celebrates.
Yes.
It's a wonderful thing.
You know, Valentine's falling on a Tuesday, okay, really is it limits us to just the three seatings. Last year it was on a Sunday, and we had great seatings on Saturday and on Sunday, but this year. Our weekend before Valentine's, this coming weekend, reservations were already full for
really?
Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, great.
Even before we started taking Valentine's reservations. So having it spread out from Friday through Monday, the 20th of February, really gives anybody and everybody an opportunity to come in to experience a Valentine's at Gejas.
You know, and people love it, and it's something that happens that people have been coming back for, gosh, how many years? I mean, you have people come back for that have been doing this for many years.
I have couples that have gotten engaged here, and they have celebrated their engagement night for over 30 years.
Really?
Okay.
Really? So. You know, it's because, and we've talked about this before, Jeff, it's because of you, your staff, the welcoming atmosphere you provide. Of course, the food is great. The wine is terrific. The entertainment is very, very enjoyable. But it's the people, and that's what this was all about.
It is. We are so blessed here to have a staff, a seasoned staff, a mature staff. A couple servers that are on our team have been here for 36 years.
What's the history of fondue? Why is fondue so popular?
Well, why fondue is popular? Because it truly brings people together that are sitting at a table. Because when you're dipping your bread, apples, and grapes into the one pot of cheese, or you're cooking together, and or you're roasting marshmallows over our dark Belgium chocolate fondue, it really brings you together. Whether it's you're on a date with your wife or your girlfriend, or you're there with friends, it's a great form of communal cooking. Mm-hmm. Now, the history of fondue comes from the mountains in Switzerland when goat herders used to move their herds from one side of the mountain range to another. All they would have, and this goes back centuries, all they would have is cheese, hard cheese. Mm-hmm. They would carry wine in a flask, in a leather pouch, and then they would have bread, too. Well, eventually the bread would get hard and stale after being out there in the mountain.
Okay.
And somebody warmed up the wine, put the cheese into the wine, it melted down, and they took the hard stale bread to dip it into the cheese to soften the bread so they could enjoy it, and that would be their meal. So that's how cheese fondue was.
Wow, that's interesting. That's interesting.
The entree fondue comes from the vineyards of Europe. When it comes time to picking grapes, you know, you have to pick them all at the right time.
Right.
So you have your large vineyards, you have your whole staff out there in the vineyards, way from the main house, picking grapes and working from morning to night. But you don't have time to bring everybody back to the main house. So what vineyard owners used to do is heat up large vats of oil and like a broth, like boiled stuff, and out in the field, then people would have a fanny pack of vegetables and meats, and they would just have a stick. They would poke what they wanted. They would cook it. They would eat it, and they'd go right back to picking the grapes after they had something to eat. So that's how the entree fondue was created. A chocolate fondue was created in New York by a chef, and so it's a very Americanized fondue. And we've just brought it all together as part of our premier dinner. It's the complete Gehaz fondue experience. The Swiss Gruyere cheese fondue with the bread, apples, and grapes. The entree fondue with people's choice of beef tenderloin, chicken, lobster, shrimp, or scallops. Assorted vegetables, 8 house-made dipping sauces. And then there's the chocolate fondue where it's a blend of Belgium chocolates. We flame it. You roast marshmallows. You dip pound cake and assorted fruits and Rice Krispie treats into the chocolate.
Nobody does it better. Nobody does it better.
We have a lot of fun here.
Nobody does it better.
We have a lot of fun here.
What's the significance of Geha?
Geha's actually, there's a prince. There's a Moroccan prince that centuries ago, he was a young prince and won many battles. And upon his greatest battle, he served all his warriors fondue.
Really?
Now, centuries later, you can find that same great fondue in Chicago. So,
and of course,
John Davis created that.
And John Davis was the originator of Gehaz. Of course, I pass it down to you, and now you're involved there. And one of the secrets was that John was the first one really to start the wine clubs idea, right?
Exactly. Well, first, Gehaz was the first wine bar city of Chicago in 1965 in the Old Town neighborhood. And then after John getting Gehaz, he moved Gehaz to its present location in 1971. And then about 10 years later, he just saw that people wanted to learn about wine.
Yeah.
And he had a buddy that had a pharmaceutical company that he did mail order. He goes, why can't I do wine by mail order? So he put together a Taste of California, a wine of the month club that would send his members 2 bottles of wine each month and would educate them on the different varietals of wine out there. They would be 2 like Chardonnays, 2 Cabernets, 2 Merlots, but they'd be from different regions of California initially. Then it became of the world, and we educated 50,000 people a month on it. So, yeah, we had a lot of fun with the wine club.
You know, you look at all the restaurants that you've seen come and go, Jeff, and there's been a whole boatload of them. And you look at Gehaz, who has been here for so long, and that's not by accident. That's because you do what you do so well, and there's a consistency there, and people rely upon that consistency.
They do. Having a very focused experience at Gehaz, people know what they can count on. They know that, okay, we need to have a fondue night. We need to have a Gehaz night. Having a night at Gehaz is just not about having fondue. It's about coming with your significant other and just relaxing, enjoying the atmosphere, wine, food, but then having that you get away from the real world when you come into Gehaz. And I think that's what's greatly contributed to our longevity. People really feel that it's an escape, and we don't rush anybody. not about table turns here at Gayhouse. Right. It's about creating that great experience for people.
You know, there's 200 steakhouses in Chicago. There's 150 Italian restaurants. There's only one Gayhouse, and people remember that.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, this past year has been an exciting year. We remodeled the facade of Gayhouse.
I haven't noticed that. I'm sorry. I've seen
yeah,
that.
No, it's, you know, after after 50 years, we need a little bit of a facelift here.
Don't we all, baby?
I need a little talking point here. But we redid the whole facade of Gayhouse with stacked stone on all the vertical walls, and we put in three fireplaces out front.
Oh, wow.
So people will be able to come and relax and enjoy a glass of wine, a bottle of wine, have our gourmet meat and cheese boards outside, and enjoy the warmth of the fire and still hear the music of our flamenco and classical guitarists playing. So it's going to be quite an exciting spring and summer here.
That's a great idea. That's just a terrific idea, Jeff. It really is. And you know what? You know, it's your deal now. It's your baby, and you're going to make it to happen, and you're doing that.
Well, Gayhouse is all about the fire. I mean, if it's not the fire on the table, it's the fire between the people.
Sure.
And as you come down the stairs from the sidewalk level, you see the fire on your left and on your right. And the last thing you see when you leave Gayhouse is the fireplace is roaring.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Unbelievable. You know, I so much enjoy every year we've been doing, like you said, we've been doing this for a long time. And I do enjoy chatting with you. It's always something I look forward to. And you know, sincerity is something that you can't fake, you know, and that's not only in people, but it's how you produce things and how you make things happen. And you can't just mail it in. And
nope.
You come to Gayhouse, and it's always a fun experience.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Known for romantic fondue dining, food one prepares and shares, and an extensive list of fine, moderately priced wines, Gayhouse Cafe features over 20 different types of fondue entrees, including cheese fondue and chocolate dessert fondue. An enchanting wine cellar atmosphere, private booths, and subdued lighting contribute to its intimate surroundings. Gayhouse Cafe was recently voted the number one audience winner for best romantic dining in Chicago. The Chicago Institution has been the site of over, and I hope I have these exactly right, 139,000 first dates, 16,000 engagements, and over 318 tons of cheese fondue and over a million bottles of wine in Gayhouse's 52-year history.
Yeah.
Voted the most romantic restaurant by USA Today, legendary Chicago Institution Gayhouse Cafe, 340 West Armitage, is planning the most romantic Valentine's Festival celebration in its 52-year history. For 11 days from Friday, February 10th through Monday, February 20th, the renowned Restaurant of Romance will be elegantly decorated and featured sparkling champagne, celebration of marriage night, live flamenco and classical guitars, photo keepsakes, and delicious, sizzling, hot fondue cuisine. Before we say goodbye, I do want to mention that because, you know, I enjoy that. The celebration of marriage night.
You know what? I was going to mention that. I mean, it's one of the greatest nights of personally, it's one of my greatest nights here to celebrate marriage. Okay, we're all about the dates, we're all about the engagements, but to celebrate marriage, we've been doing this now for 15, 20 years. We've been celebrating marriage, and to end our Valentine's celebration, we want to celebrate marriage. Where? All people have to do is make your reservation, let us know how many years you've been married, bring in something, cocktail napkin, copy of your marriage certificate that shows us how many years you've been married, and we will give you 1% off your food bill for every year you've been married.
There have been some 50 years there.
There has been 55 years.
Oh, boy.
Don't pay you, okay? But you will have a good time. Everything is on us, yes.
Always a pleasure, my pal. A phone number, website, if people like get some information.
Sure. Gayhouse is Gayhouse Cafe, GEJASCafe.com. And our phone number is 773-281-9101.
Always a pleasure, my pal. God bless you. Continued success. Anything we can do, you know we're here for you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, my
pal. Have a great holiday. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Jeff Lawler, our good pal, the proprietor of Gayhouse Cafe, and the most romantic restaurant in Chicago, and certainly in the nation, I would think. For information, 773-281-9101. Always enjoy chatting with Jeff. We've been doing for so many years. And great idea, an outside seating area with some fireplaces and some wine and some cheese. Not in this weather, but it's going to get warm sooner or later, and we'll all enjoy it. So if you can, celebrate Valentine's Day. No better place than Gay Ass Cafe. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank Deb Clapp, the executive director of the League of Chicago Theaters, celebrating Chicago Theater Week 2017, a great time to get a taste of Chicago theater, as it is all year long. But Deb does such a terrific job, and for information, contact her at 312-554-9800. Our good friend Marilyn Halperin, the Director of Education and Communications for the Chicago Shakespeare Theater, beginning to celebrate Short Shakespeare, Romeo and Juliet, Saturday mornings at 11, February 25th through March 25th. And then she takes it to all the schools in and around the area for another month. What a terrific job she does, and a very special lady because she's so dedicated to bringing the joy of Shakespeare to young people and getting them a taste and what it's like to enjoy one, our world's greatest playwright. For information, 312-595-5600. And finally, our good buddy, Jeff Lawler, the proprietor of the Restaurant of Romance, Gay House Cafe. No better place to celebrate Valentine's Day, 340 West Armitage, for 11 days, beginning February 10th, continuing through Monday, February 20th. The festive Valentine celebration with the second most romantic man in Chicago. We've been doing that a long time with Jeff Lawler, and we really have fun doing it. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today, we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week. And as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. I'll wish everyone a happy Valentine's Day, but end with a quote that I mentioned a little earlier when Marilyn and I were talking from the great acting teacher Stella Adler. And it's about our show, Culture and the Arts. She said, life will beat you down and crush your soul, but art will remind you that you have one. And we have art that surrounds all of us. Have a great day. Any luck, then I suppose.
The music. The music.